Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. And guess what? I got to visit King Tut's tomb. Well, sort of. I'll explain in a minute. And at long last, I have posted some new videos on YouTube. They're free, about the magic of shapes, sacred geometry, psychotronics. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the content of those videos, and I think you'll find them really fascinating. They're short. And before I jump into all this, I don't usually do this right at the top of the show, but I do want to reiterate to you my social media accounts, if you want to try to follow me somewhere. And I say that because, you know, the next couple of months are going to be crazy in the world leading up to this election. We know that. And I think because of that, you're going to see a lot more hacking on the internet. Sites are going to get hacked. Things are going to get censored. And you never know what site may go down or what's going to happen. And so I'm just going to tell you the different ways you can access me on social media because, you know, different people prefer different types of platforms. I do have an account on Instagram, but I don't really use it that much. I mean, you can't do all the social media. It's just too much. You got to kind of pick and choose. But I do post pictures on Instagram from time to time. My Instagram name is ShadowboxENT. I'm the president of a company called Shadowbox Enterprises. So it's ShadowboxENT. My Twitter name is just my name, Joshua P. Warren, at Joshua P. Warren. If you go to Facebook, just search for Joshua P. Warren's Daily Podcast. And I prefer most of all, though, I mean, the main thing is for you to go to my website, joshuapwarren.com. Take 2 seconds to sign up for my free e-newsletter there at the site. And that way I'll be able to email you directly. And if you do all those things, then hopefully we will be able to stay in touch regardless of what technological ups and downs may occur over the coming months. So, that said, here I am in Las Vegas, Nevada, and here we have an incredible, detailed recreation of King Tut's tomb. No, I didn't have to go to Egypt. That's one of the great things about being here in Las Vegas. You really can sort of take a miniature tour of the world all within this one little town, right? You know, you have everything sort of represented. You have Venice and New York and Paris, France, or you go to the Luxor and you're in ancient Egypt. And I mean, you have all these little examples of places around the world that you can find here, whatever your flavor is. And yet, usually, not only is it a lot easier to do your world tour here, but it smells a lot better. I have a friend who went to Venice, and she came here and she went to the Venetian, which is just a mind-boggling place. And, you know, they have, it's when you're indoors, but it feels like you're outdoors. They have the gondolas there on the waterways. And she said, this is exactly like being in Venice, except it smells so much better. So anyway, here at the Las Vegas Natural History Museum, which is a surprisingly good museum, they have got a recreation of King Tut's tomb. And I say that the museum here is a surprisingly good natural history museum because it only costs $12 to get in. And if you can get discounts if you're a senior or military or whatever, I think. So anybody can go there easily. And it's sort of a nondescript thing. You know, nobody knows about it too much because it's in the shadow of all these big casinos and all of these big gaudy shows and stuff. But when you go there, I mean, they have got all kinds of dinosaurs and they have various exhibits that travel through. Like they have one about nocturnal creatures right now. They have an aquarium there and a whole like underwater room. And they've got just a variety of different species of animals and models all throughout history. I mean, really cool way to spend, you know, hour and a half or 2 hours and just, you know, get into some good meaty educational material here in Sin City. And so they have got this amazing reproduction of the entire tomb of King Tut. And they have it because, well, we are famous for this giant pyramid here in Las Vegas, which is a casino and hotel. It's a resort called the Luxor. Surely you know what I'm talking about. When I look out my window here every night, I can see its gigantic beam of light firing straight up into the heavens from the apex of the pyramid. I've been told that it is the most powerful man-made light on Earth. I don't doubt that. I know that pilots can see it from hundreds of miles away. And so, of course, the Luxor is it's modeled after the Great Pyramid. The Luxor, however, is it's a little shorter. It's not as big as the Great Pyramid. But they also have a giant Sphinx outside, and that Sphinx is bigger than the actual Sphinx in Egypt. The one here in Vegas, sitting outside the Luxor, is 110 feet tall, and the one that is in Egypt, the original, is 66 feet tall. So the one here is substantially bigger. So that's kind of interesting to keep in mind. And, you know, I was thinking the other day about the Sphinx and what a strange thing it is. You know, before I get into my King Tut story, if you look up just the definition of exactly, you know, what is a Sphinx, it says a Sphinx is a mythical creature with the head of a human, a falcon, a cat, or a sheep, and the body of a lion with the wings of an eagle. In Greek tradition, the Sphinx was the head of a woman, the haunches of a lion, and the wings of a bird. So there are all these different forms of Sphinx. But we, of course, are familiar with the one in ancient Egypt there, from ancient Egypt, that has the face of a person. So, have you ever looked into what they call the riddle of the Sphinx, by the way? It says here that the Sphinx is said to have guarded the entrance to the Greek city of Thebes, asking a riddle to travelers to allow them passage. And so you'd walk up, and I bet you were sweating bullets because this giant creature, this Sphinx, is standing there and speaks to you in what I imagine to be a rather eloquent voice, and gives you the riddle, and then just sits there and starts licking its lips, because if you do not get the riddle right, then the Sphinx pounces upon you, strangles you, and eats you. So you talk about some confidence, man. According to the mythology here, Oedipus solved the riddle. Here was the riddle. Let's see if you can figure this out. Maybe you have heard the answer before. If not, see if you could figure this out. The most famous riddle that the Sphinx supposedly would ask is, which creature has one voice and yet becomes four-footed and two-footed and three-footed? I'll ask that again now. What creature has one voice and yet becomes four-footed and two-footed and three-footed? Okay, so the Sphinx here, she asks you this, starts licking her lips, and you go, oh, jeez. Oedipus solved the riddle by answering, man. Man who crawls on all fours as a baby, then walks on 2 feet as an adult, and then uses a walking stick in old age. Okie dokie. They say that here's a second one that the Sphinx apparently was known to ask. There are two sisters. One gives birth to the other, and she, in turn, gives birth to the first. Who are the two sisters? I'll ask it again. Wouldn't you hate to get this one from the Sphinx? There are two sisters. One gives birth to the other, and she in turn gives birth to the first. Who are the two sisters? The answer? is day and night. Says both words in Greek there are feminine. Boy, riddles are hard as hell, aren't they? You know, here's a riddle that I remember, and I don't recall if this is from the Sphinx or somewhere else, but this is just one that always sticks in my head. Here we go. This is the last riddle I'll give you. Riddle me this, riddle me that. What builds up castles, tears down mountains, makes some men blind, and helps others see? Okay, so I'll ask it again. What builds up castles, tears down mountains, makes some blind, and help others see? And the answer to that is sand. Because sand erodes castles. Sand is used to build castles. It erodes mountains. It gets in people's eyes and blinds them, but then it can be turned into glass to make glasses to help you see. Okay, enough of that. The King Tut exhibit. And, you know, even though I enjoyed very much, I love going to museums, and I was really looking forward to going to the Las Vegas Natural History Museum. I was most looking forward to seeing this exhibit that they have because it was originally built at and for the Luxor. It makes sense, doesn't it? That the Luxor would have this nice reproduction of King Tut's tomb. And I don't know why they decided to move it out. I know they have other exhibits there now. They have a Titanic exhibit. They have one of those bodies exhibits. So, you know, I guess people, you know, they see something enough times and they want something new. So they fortunately handed it over to the museum, and it's in great shape. And just to refresh you a little bit, King Tut was born around 3,300 years ago. That's hard to imagine, isn't it? He took the throne at only 8 or 9 years of age. He grew to adulthood, and they said he was about 5'6". And then he died at age 18 or 19. Nobody knows exactly why he died. It wasn't precisely recorded, but from peripheral reports and scientific studies of his mummy and all that, they say that he probably died from a leg infection. They think he might have fractured his leg in a chariot accident or something like that, and that took him out. It really surprised everybody, of course. And so when he died, they claim that they kind of had to rush his burial, that they really weren't prepared to entomb this young man, and that a lot of the things in his tomb were probably created for other people, but they, you know, he got them instead. So his tomb was kind of rushed and sort of put together a little more sloppily than the average pharaoh. Of course, he's so famous because in 1922, the archaeologist Howard Carter made this earth-shattering discovery of this tomb with all of these well-preserved artifacts. It was on actually November 26th of 1922. Howard Carter, he was a Britishman, he was there with his financier, Lord Carnarvon. And they went down these steps and found some kind of a doorway there. And apparently Carter made a, quote, tiny breach in the left-hand corner of the doorway using a chisel that his grandmother had given him for his 17th birthday. So he just knocked a little chunk out with this little chisel that he'd had for so long. And then he picked up a candle and he held it up and says he was able to peer in by the light of the candle and see the many gold and ebony treasures there still in place. Carnarvon is standing behind him. He can't see anything. And so Carnarvon says, "Hey, can you see anything?" And that's when Howard Carter replied with the famous words, "Yes, things, wonderful things." Yep, that was how he discovered Tutankhamun's tomb. So, As you walk through this recreation of the tomb, what they've done is they've sort of, because it was so small, they had to, and I mean, it wasn't like super small, but it was small compared to what you probably would imagine a pharaoh's tomb would be. They kind of like cut sections out of the walls so that you can kind of look through the walls from different angles, if that makes any sense. And in fact, they say that the space within the burial chamber was so tight that the shrines had to be constructed inside the chamber. How about that? They couldn't even get the stuff in and out of the doorway. They had to bring materials in and build it inside the chamber. And I posted all these pics for you on my Twitter page, at Joshua P. Warren. I posted a few on my Instagram. I definitely hope that you'll follow me on Twitter there. Go to at Joshua P. Warren and look at those pictures there from me wandering through. And here are some things that that surprised me. For one thing, I did not realize that King Tut was the father of two stillborn babies. And there are actually tiny little, like miniature little King Tut coffins in there for each of his little stillborn kids. And there's also a picture of their x-ray. They were x-rayed, and that picture of the x-rays hanging on the wall next to their little coffins. So that's pretty wild. And there was a lot there to be interested in. In fact, of course, the walls are depicted with all of these abundant scenes from daily Egyptian life if you were in the upper class. And they mention that according to Egyptian magic, if you went to a tomb and you showed a scene, then that is what would happen in the next world. So that makes sense, doesn't it? That they would say, well, let's depict this. Let's create a thought form, and then this is what's going to actually happen to this person in the next world, in his or her next life. And of course, they also believe that the pharaoh didn't really just leave us all together, that the pharaoh would also return and help protect Egypt and rise every day with the sun and fend off the evils of darkness and all that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, really a fascinating thing. And obviously, everybody knows about the curse of King Tut's tomb. I'm not going to get into that right now. I've talked about it before, that all these people who were associated with the excavation of King Tut's tomb seem to have these unexpected, tragic deaths and other things that happened to them. And so I, however, think that is another good reason to probably not go to the actual tomb. If you have your choice, you're probably better off to play it safe and go to the recreation here in Las Vegas, because I feel totally fine. I'm shy. I do not feel that the curse of King Tut is attached to the recreation here. You have to go to the tomb for that one. And that's another really cool thing for you to keep in mind. As soon as we get everything opened back up here in Las Vegas, I am going to be announcing the new date for my conference that got postponed. We were going to have it in May, and as you know, I've had to put it off because of all this COVID stuff. And I'm just waiting on the governor to open up my venue, basically. I've already paid for the venue, and I'm waiting for the venue to open, and then, you know, we'll take it from there. But the hotel that I'm telling people I recommend they stay at, which is the Downtown Grand, is only 1 mile from the Las Vegas Natural History Museum. And it's only 1.5 miles from our venue, which is Millennium Fandom. So when you come to the conference and you're sort of planning for things you want to do while you're in town, well, you're going to be a mile and a half down the road from this museum, where you can pay $12 and go in and see King Tut's tomb and all kinds of other cool stuff. So just keep that in the back of your mind if you're coming to my conference. So, and I promise you, I'll give you an update on that as soon as I get the information. We're all just sort of hanging on here. But yeah, hopefully you'll go and check out the pictures of me walking through this. I think you'll find it interesting. There are some things there that I'm not going to talk about, so you'll be inspired to go take a look. So now, let me move on to these new short free educational videos that I have posted for you about, well, there are two of them. The first one is about the magic of shapes and psychotronics. And I let me start by giving you kind of a little trivial behind the scenes on this. So usually when I'm going to do a video, I will try to do something with my hair. I'll try to put some gel in it or something like that, or, you know, whatever, because as you may or may not know, I naturally have Giorgio Tsoukalos hair, you know, like Einstein hair. Lauren calls it Christopher Walken hair. I have just hair that just grows straight out of my head, and I don't know if you remember those pencils that had the hair on the top, and you could twist it and make it all neat, and then you could like roll it between your palms, and then you'd stop, and its hair would be all over the place like a damn Muppet. That my hair naturally just grows straight out of my head like that. I look insane. And so, you know, people ask me, why do you wear a fedora? Well, a lot of times it's just because I don't want to have to mess with my hair, and I haven't had a haircut. I'm a very clean guy, but I'm not the kind of guy who gets up every day and, like, puts a lot of effort into his, you know, primping around with his appearance, right? So, last night I was filming these videos, and I had a lot going on. I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna go all natural. Nobody's gonna care. So even though Lauren was operating the camera while I was filming these videos, after I put it together and we sat down to watch it, as soon as it started, she saw it on TV, she just starts crying. She's laughing so hysterically because of my hair. So, look, I'm sorry if my hair is a distraction in these videos, but this is a rare opportunity for you to see what, you know, my hair naturally is capable of looking like without any product or me doing anything to it. So I guess in the future I'll wax it down or something. I don't know. But so just be prepared for that. So the first one that I shot is one that I've been teasing for a while because I just think it's really fascinating, called The Magic of Shapes and Psychotronics. So here's the gist of that. And if you don't know what psychotronics is and all that, well, you just have to go back and listen to some of my podcasts. I'm not going to recap everything. But, you know, when Robert Pavlida was presenting his psychotronic devices that were supposedly tapping into some mysterious psychic forces or condensing them or focusing them or helping transduce them into something mechanical, he was quite secretive about his particular techniques, but he claimed that one of the things that was key was combining certain shapes in a certain way. And that actually rings very true to me. And he said that he had learned which shapes to combine in certain ways by studying ancient texts on alchemy, etc. But I personally have, you know, I've been interested in this subject for a long time. I see how clearly it relates to sacred geometry, which is simply the idea that, you know, shapes, they do affect energy and they do relate to reality in a very weird way. I mean, look at a phonograph. A phonograph works because it has a funnel. Whether you're going to record a sound or play it back, you need that funnel shape because it's wide on one end, it's narrow on the other, so it can take a vibration and transduce it down into a small spot on a needle, or do the opposite, take that small signal from the needle and then turn it into a larger vibration that goes out and you perceive that as music. In electrostatics, you've heard me talk a lot about the fact that when you have an electrostatic generator like a Van de Graaff, one of those that you put your hands on and your hair stands up, it has a ball or a dome on the top. And by the way, I guess that's a very fitting thing. Here I was in the video talking about electrostatics, my hair is standing up, so it looks like I've just been touching the damn Van de Graaff, right? So You have a ball there because a ball or a sphere or a dome of some kind, it naturally builds up electrostatic charges. It collects them. It has a capacitance, and it builds them up to a certain point, and then boom, it discharges in a little lightning bolt, and then it takes a few seconds, and it builds it up again, and then boom, it discharges it in a lightning bolt. But if you take a needle and you put it on top of that ball, it'll stop doing that. And that's because needles spray electrostatic charges off into the air. So the charge doesn't have time to build up on the ball. Instead, it shoots out of the point of the needle. People like Benjamin Franklin understood this, which is why he created his famous lightning rod. The lightning rod is basically a big needle that you put on top of a building. And that helps prevent the buildup of electrostatic charges so that the building will not get hit by lightning. And if it does get hit by lightning, well, then you also have a wire that runs down from the rod into the ground. So hopefully the energy will bypass the building and go into the ground. But again, the only difference between the metal ball and the metal needle is the shape. One shape builds up energy and stores it. The other shape does not. It does the opposite. It moves it. It sprays it. These are very obvious, practical, exaggerated examples of that relationship between matter and energy and how that it is influenced by shape. So as a part of my demonstration, I wanted to bring out some really kind of like basic, almost crude things that have no moving parts and just show how that because of their shape, they just do weird shit, you know? So the first thing I took out was this thing that I imagine just about everybody's seen one of these at one point or another. It's called a rattleback. And they can be made out of wood. They used to naturally occur in some stones. People thousands of years ago were fascinated because they would find these stones and streams and creeks and rivers that were shaped like, it's kind of like an oblong shape. And basically the idea is the one I have is made out of plastic. So it's just a piece of plastic that is shaped a certain way. And if you spin it in one direction, I think the one that I have, if you spin it counterclockwise, it likes that. It just goes on and on and on, spinning counterclockwise. But if you spin it clockwise, it only spins a few times, and then it stops, and then it starts spinning counterclockwise. And by the way, I think when I did the video, I may have misspoken and said that that I was spinning it clockwise when I was spinning it counterclockwise, but it doesn't matter. You can see in the video. So the point is, usually when you sit an object down and you give it a good spin, well, it's just going to go the way you spun it, right? That's common sense. It's totally counterintuitive for you to take a piece of plastic, sit it down, spin it, and it spins a few times and then stops and then starts spinning the other way. Very weird. And I know that, you know, scientists, they can look at stuff like this and describe it and give some explanation in their terms where they're talking about gravity and equilibrium and all that. And it's like, yeah, that's true. But you don't really even know exactly what the hell gravity is. You know, I mean, there's a difference between explaining and describing something and understanding what it is. So regardless of how it works, it's just an example of the power of shape. And a real world example of how the shape influences the motion of an object right there in front of you before your eyes. Then I brought out one of the strangest things I've bought in a while. It's another big hunk of plastic. It's called a gombok, G-O-M-B-O-C. Honestly, I don't even know what the heck that means. I'm going to look this up real quick. I should have done this for the video. What does gombok mean? It's spelled G-O-M-B-O-C. And, you know what? I don't even see. Okay, there it is. It means sphere-like in Hungarian. And that makes sense, I guess, because this is kind of a recent invention, the gombok. This is a shape that was, I guess you'd say, theorized by a Russian mathematician in 1995. It didn't exist. He just came up with this in his, you know, in his mind. This is a good example of manifestation, isn't it? And then like 11 years later in 2006, these two Hungarian scientists finally created one. And so they called it the Gombak. Now we know it means sphere-like in Hungarian. This is just a chunk of plastic. It's heavy, the way it's made, and it has it's very particular about the position that it likes to be in. So when you set this thing down and you take your hand off of it, you imagine, well, it should just settle down. But instead it rolls a little bit and it settles. And you're like, okay, well, I guess it had to roll. But then it rolls again in like a whole different direction, like a perpendicular direction. Why? It's just a weird shape. But it has its own ability to move on its own because of its shape. And then the last thing I brought out is, this is like the real crowd pleaser. This is called a tippy top. And it's just, you can get them in, you know, made of anything. Mine happens to be made out of metal. And it's just a top, just like you played with when you were a kid. You spin it and you watch it, you know, you watch it spin. It's one piece of material. It's not like a gyroscope. There's no moving parts. But for some reason, when you spin this top, something really weird happens. So the top is actually shaped like a mushroom. So when you with like a really big kind of dome-shaped cap on it. So when you put this thing down on a counter or a table, you know, it's there laying on the heavy big end with the little stem sticking up in the air, like most tops. But then you spin it, give it a little energy there, and all of a sudden something almost miraculous happens. It gets spinning for a few seconds, and then boom, it flips upside down and starts spinning on the stem part with the big heavy part above it. Does that make sense? So when you spin it, you spin the stem and the big parts on the bottom, and then all of a sudden it just does a flip-a-roo, and now it wants to spin on the stem. Why would it do that? It's very, very strange. So these are elementary examples of how that, you know, shapes really do make a big impact on how things react in the environment within physical reality. And if you know of other things, other shapes out there that do stuff like that, I'd love to hear about it. You know, feel free to email me or just post a comment somewhere on one of my videos there, and maybe I'll see it. But here's the important thing to consider, though. You know, maybe Pavlita was onto something with the psychotronic generators and shape power, just like what we find in sacred geometry. So we really need to experiment with this and explore it more. I mean, what if there is some incredible shape combination or a combination of shapes that you could put together that complement each other so well that it just produces some kind of incredible driving psychic force and makes something amazing happen? It taps into the vacuum. We're into the zero-point energy, right? Who knows? He said the shape of things and the composition of things, you know, made a difference. And that makes sense as well. So I hope you'll check out that video. It's only 10 minutes long. I know you'll enjoy it if you can just ignore my hair. While I was sitting down and filming, I said, you know what, Lauren? Let me shoot another video real quick. And this one was only like 3 minutes long. I just bought this thing called an aura meter that I saw online. They're kind of hard to find. And it's a type of dowsing tool. And basically it has a handle, like a plastic handle. And extending from that handle is a stiff metal wire that has a spring in the middle. And then on the end of it is a pretty heavy weight with a point on it. And if you just lift it up in front of you, it looks like you're holding a wet noodle. Kinda. It bobs up and down. I could say a limp sausage, maybe. I could say a limp. Well, anyway, look. So when you're holding this thing, it doesn't look that. It's all bouncy and kind of weird. But you're actually supposed to hold it in the opposite direction so that the weight is not pointing down. It's pointing up. So there's even more stress on this little springy thing. And it's very, very sensitive to the environment. So you're basically holding this handle that has this little springy weight on it that's bobbing up and down. And this design was, they say, perfected in 1952 by a researcher named Vern Cameron. I don't know that much about him, actually. I think he might have been English, but I'm not sure. So it was called the Aura Meter because you were supposedly, originally, to take this thing and walk up to a person to see if you could actually figure out the size and shape of the person's bioenergy field. And so I'm not certain of the exact technique, but my understanding is like you'd have somebody stand in a room and you walk up to that person and you're holding this dowsing thing, and when you get right into their field, like when the little weight on the end encounters that the edge of that person's bioenergy field, it will react. So you can walk around and kind of map three-dimensionally that person's field. And interestingly enough, they say that just about everybody has a hole in their aura or their bioenergy field right around their lower back. Isn't that funny? I don't know why that would be, but I guess, you know, if what if it's like, you know how they talk about chakras and, you know, the human spine, I think, has 33 vertebrae. 33 is a very special number. Maybe there's a certain energy that travels into the bottom of your spine all the way up your back and then shoots out your head. I wonder if you have a hole over the top of your head also, like your body's a big vortex. Like, I guess your lower back is the bottom. Your lower back's the ass of the vortex, and your head is, well, the head of the vortex, maybe. But people who are into this aura meter, they say that, oh man, this is like the most versatile thing. If you can douse, you're going to love this thing. You can use it for any type of dowsing purpose. You can take it out in the field, and you can tell it you want to find water or gold or silver or whatever you're looking for, and if you know how to read that thing, it'll point you where you need to go. Or you can use it on a map. You can sit down and map dows. You don't have to go in the field. So who knows? Maybe I could sit down and be like, let's say I have a map of Las Vegas, and I say, where is a big jackpot going to get hit tonight? You know, and I put it down, and they claim if you map dows that it really pulls down strongly and hits a spot on the map. You can ask it to go, swing left or right or up and down or clockwise or counterclockwise to get answers to questions, yes and no. You can also just sort of hold it by the spring and let it hang and use it like a natural pendulum, an ordinary type of pendulum style. I mean, I joke and say, look, this thing will make you pancakes. You know, it'll peel an egg for you. It'll walk your dog. I mean, like, this is the pendulum that they say will do everything. So I just got it, and I have not had time to really experiment with it yet, but I figured, what the hell, I'll show it to everybody. So I shot a little 3-minute video, and you can see what it looks like. And again, they're kind of hard to find. I got mine for, I think they were charging $65. It's, and the one I got's a very nice one. It's really well made. And I got it from a company in Canada, and their website is Addermark.com. By the way, I have nothing to do with them. I don't know them. This is not an ad. I'm just telling you in case you're interested. Addermark. Addermark. Addermark.com. They have all kinds of pendulums and dowsing stuff. So it actually looks like, you know, a really good resource if you're into that. Some people are more comfortable with dowsing than others. My experiences with dowsing are so-so. But those two videos are there for you. And you know what? I know there are people who are going to look at videos like this and say, wow, That guy just looks like he's out of his mind. He's crazy. Look at his damn hair! But here's why I think it's so important for people like us to keep an open mind and experiment, because, you know, look, not everybody has the time to do this. Not everybody has the money to do this. And I certainly do not recommend to anybody that you go out and you spend your last dollar trying to get something that's going to turn you into a wizard or a sorcerer. You know, I mean, you have to prioritize things. I chose very, you know, my wife and I, we chose not to have children. And one of the reasons we did that is so we would have a lot more expendable income to have fun and play with things. You know, we can take trips. If we go out to a restaurant, you know, we can eat whatever we want. and I can buy weird stuff and experiment with it. And if you are in a position, if you have the curiosity and you like to learn, I think it's just important for us to all keep some basic, you know, philosophical points in mind, that everybody can look at something and say, well, that just looks crazy to me, and walk away. But it's not until you give it a try, you know for sure. It's just like, I mean, who would ever think that that top is going to turn upside down when you spin it, right? 99% of the people in the world would walk right by that and just say, yeah, it's a top, and not even spin it. But if you're the one person who says, hey, let's see what this looks like when it spins, and it does that, whoa, you found something incredible here. And I guess this really leads into, and I'm going to get on my soapbox for just a minute, I promise, why that it's so important for us right now in history, when we have all of these wonderful opportunities at our fingertips, great technology, the ability to travel, you know, we have all this stuff at our fingertips, and yet we're kind of brainwashed all the time, especially when you're like, you're in this political environment we're in, brainwashed, because everybody gets sort of divided into choosing a side. It's like, you got to team up with somebody. You know, the media kind of deceives you into believing that you're part of a group, that you don't exist as an individual. And they scare you into thinking that way. And in politics especially, you know, we choose the lesser of two evils most of the time. I mean, how often do you vote for somebody instead of against somebody? You know, think about that. What kind of situation have we gotten where everybody's like, oh boy, these are my options? Okay. Think about who you are as an individual, okay? And this applies to everything that you do in your life as a singular point of consciousness. And that singular point of consciousness is the whole for you. That's all you're ever going to have. You're not a part of a group. Your singular individual point of consciousness is you. What you learn, what you explore. How much are you going to open your mind and take advantage of that and look at these strange things? Or are you going to close it down and waste this opportunity you have? What if, just what if, there is no one tending the light at the end of the tunnel? What if there isn't some team you have to be on? What if there is no organized Illuminati out there with people who somehow know more than you do? What if that's not the case? You know, this life doesn't last forever, and so for right now, it's about you. This is your time. You. You're an individual. So this is your opportunity to do this weird stuff. Open your mind. Experiment with things. It's your opportunity to explore, to learn, think for yourself, make good choices that will bring you and your loved ones as much happiness as possible. You'll never be bored. I don't have that quote in front of me, but it's in my book, Use the Force, A Jedi's Guide to the Law of Attraction, where philosopher, I think his name's Alan Watts, basically said the universe uses us as its senses to know itself. You know, it hears through our ears, it tastes through our mouths, etc. And that's why sometimes I end up working on devices and projects that make no sense to people. You know, everybody has a tendency, and it's understandable, to try to pigeonhole you. I'm going to get some water. You know, here in the desert, we have not had any rain out here. Oh, gosh, we're coming up on a record. It's been months since there's been a drop of rain. And sometimes you look out the window and it's hazy. There's the sandstorms and stuff that blow through. And, man, your throat gets so dry. The humidity here is like, you know, it gets down to less than 10% sometimes. Whew. If you don't stay hydrated, you can be in trouble. It's, you know, every day it's been triple digits here. They say sometimes here in Las Vegas, you're sweating and you don't even know you're sweating because that it's evaporating practically immediately, you know, as soon as it comes out of you. So you don't mess around and not drink water as much as you can. Which is interesting because this product that I've been working on is a product that I can't test in this environment. And this is not the product. This is another project. I have a product, like a manifestation product that I'm working on. I'll tell you a little more about that in a minute. This is another project. People try to pigeonhole you, and they, you know, like they, if they read one of your books, like, well, I guess one of my books about ghosts, well, then I'm the ghost guy to them. If they read one of my books about UFOs, well, he's the UFO guy, you know. If they come to a show or whatever, well, he's the showman. If they listen to the podcast, well, you know, he's the podcaster. I mean, and that's fine with me. I like having all these different hats. I'm self-employed. I'm an entrepreneur. I can do what I want to do, and I do everything I can. But sometimes I work on some project, and somebody goes, huh? When I was living in Puerto Rico, I had, I lived there for years and loved every minute of it. But, boy, the mosquitoes just love to eat me up. You know, mosquitoes are really bad, but they especially target me. And everybody knows that some people get targeted more than others by mosquitoes. And I got tired of having to slather myself with bug spray every time I walked out the door. I mean, I lived in a town called Boquerón, and we called it the Boquerón Cologne. And it can't be good for you to also have every inch of your body covered with bug spray every time you walk out the door. So that was a problem there. And I started realizing more and more about how many problems that mosquitoes create on the planet. They say it's the deadliest creature on the planet. And I thought, man, there's got to be a better way of keeping mosquitoes from biting an individual. Everybody either wants to use a chemical, or they want to set a trap. And if you set a trap, well, then you have to stay in the area where the trap is. You can't just run around town. You can try modifying the landscape so there's no standing water, but that's a big-ass project, and that's almost impossible in a rainforest. And then you have people who are genetically modifying mosquitoes, and, boy, who knows how that little Jurassic Park operation is going to turn out. So I spent a lot of time studying all this and doing experiments with mosquitoes in my laboratory. They were treated well. I just aggravated them a lot. And I came up finally with a prototype for a portable, wearable device that I hope will keep away mosquitoes. And I asked on Facebook, who's got a mosquito problem? And people all over the country, certain parts of the world, contacted me and said, oh, send it to me. So I only had one of these prototypes made, and I sent it to a mosquito-infested place. And because here in Las Vegas, we don't have mosquitoes. That's one of the nice things about being here in the desert. And, I mean, well, they say they're out there, but I've never seen one. They've never bitten me, so they're that rare. But I sent it to a lady who is a friend of mine. I've known her for a long time, and she was willing to do this experiment. And so I sent it off to her, and I'm sitting there thinking, man, like, I sure hope this works, because if it doesn't, then I don't know exactly what my next step's going to be with this project. She went out for a night, and doing this specifically for the experiment, you know, I said, I want you to go to this mosquito-infested place with all your skin exposed, or as much as you want to expose, you know. Take pictures of everything on your body, your neck, your arms, your legs, etc. Wear it out there one night. Let's see what happens. And then go back out a second night and don't wear it, and let's see what happens. She went out the first night. She wore this thing, and she said, I did not get a single mosquito bite. Then she went out the second night, and guess what? She got mosquito bites. And I'm pretty excited. Now, this is the first time this thing has been put to the test in the field. She goes, do you want me to do it again? I said, yes, please. So if she continues to have this repeatable success, then I'm going to test this a few more times. And then I'm going to, I'm going to have different people test it in different areas. And then if I think this thing is actually going to work, I then am going to release this freely to the world. I don't want any money for it. I just would like to have people remember who made it. You know, put my name attached to it, because it'd be an example of how that even an independent researcher who's self-funded, who everybody thinks is, you know, the Mr. Paranormal, can actually get something very practical done by studying paranormal activity, because studying paranormal activity has given me some ideas about things that we could try on these mosquitoes. So I won't get into any more detail on that until we see what happens, but keep your fingers crossed. And this is an example of, if, you know, like people say, well, why are you doing that? You know, why are you taking time working on mosquitoes? I say, well, hey, because if I can do something to help the world, well, why not do it? Why not give it a try? And you just don't know what you're capable of doing until you start experimenting with things and playing around and seeing what works and what doesn't work. And this, this is a really exciting year for me, because I told you, I have created a new manifestation product. And I'm not joking. This may be the best thing that I have ever created for manifestation. I've been using it, and I know that word miraculous is, we've already used it on for the prayer board, but this time I'm telling you, like, so far it's been miraculous what this new thing has been able to do. And I'm basically convinced at this point that it's at least effective enough in my experiences that you should have it in your hands. But my issue here is, it's one thing for me to make two or three of these for me to play with. It's another thing for me to make a batch of these and have them all ready to go out, so that when you hit the buy it now button, you know, it shoots out the door to you and you get it and it's all compact and ready to go. So that's what I'm working on right now, is kind of figuring out how to make a batch of these things, because this will be my last product of 2020 for sure. And I'm going to try my best to get it out by October. And that's kind of an ambitious goal, but I'm going to try to do it, because I really think that we need it ASAP this year. We really do. Every single one of us needs it ASAP. This thing is working so incredibly well that I think when you get this, this could be something that changes your life almost instantly. So anyway, it's something to look forward to. And I will be keeping you updated on that. Plus, you know, I've just finished a new book. That'll be coming out soon. I'll tell you more about that. Plus, we have these exciting changes coming to this podcast, which I'll be telling you about soon. Oh my goodness. There's so much to do. Can you believe it's September already? September. Next month, it's October. And this Halloween is not just any Halloween. On for one thing, Halloween falls on a Saturday, which always means extra party time, which that really sucks, doesn't it, this year? Because, you know, the party situation is so compromised by COVID concerns. But nonetheless, Saturday night, Halloween, traditional party time, and it's going to be a full moon that night. That only happens like once every 18, 19, 20 years. So you know the werewolves are going to be out and about on Halloween night. But as if that weren't enough, it's also a blue moon. Do you remember what that means? If you have two full moons in a month, in the same month, the second one is called a blue moon. So here we are in this pivotal, almost liminal year, this historic, bizarro, interdimensional year, 2020, where everybody's just waiting for the next shoe to drop. And wouldn't you know it, Halloween, October 31st, falls on a Saturday, full moon, blue moon. You do not want to miss the Haunted Asheville Ghost Tours this October. I am telling you, you don't want to miss them. We are doing a tour every single night in October, and we are selling out already. And that's because, due to the COVID laws, we are very limited in how many people we're allowed to take out for a tour. So if you are anywhere close to Asheville, North Carolina, and you would like to take my Haunted Asheville Ghost Tours, cost about, I think, $22, $23 a person, you better make your reservation now. Again, most of the tours are already sold out, but we're adding new ones, and we're doing whatever we can to take advantage of how special this October is going to be. Go to hauntedasheville.com, hauntedasheville.com. Just click the big red button that says book online now and look at the calendar, and it will show you if we have availability for certain nights. But don't wait. Don't wait any longer. Get your ticket now for a nice tour there in October. If you are near Asheville, North Carolina, we're the best. We're the best. We're waiting to see if we won the USA Today poll. That will be announced on September 4th. They will be announcing the number one ghost tour in America based upon their readers' votes. But regardless, every single year we win certificates of excellence. Now they call them Traveler's Choice Award. We just won the new one on that. So, you know, go to hauntedasheville.com, read the reviews, buy your ticket. Don't wait. If you want to do this in October, or, you know, they're running right now, you don't have to wait till October. You know, take one tonight, tomorrow night, whatever. HauntedAsheville.com, HauntedAsheville.com. Okay, my friends, before I wrap up this podcast, and let me tell you, you want to stay tuned, because I have a lot to be sharing with you soon, as you can hear. I want you to please tell everybody that you know about this podcast. You know, get them hooked. You know, tell them, look, this is good stuff. It's free, and it might make you think about things a little bit differently. Open your mind and, you know, expose you to some new stuff that will help you get through the madness that we're all dealing with. I want to remind you again, when it comes to social media, I don't do that much on Instagram, but my Instagram name is ShadowboxENT. My YouTube channel is Joshua P. Warren. So subscribe there, please. Twitter, at Joshua P. Warren. I hope you definitely follow me on Twitter, at Joshua P. Warren. Facebook, just look up Joshua P. Warren's Daily Podcast. Sign up for my free e-newsletter there. at my website, joshuapwarren.com. And right now, if you, the easiest thing, if you want to see the videos I was telling you about and the pictures of me and King Tut's recreated tomb, just go to my Twitter page. You can just type in Twitter, Joshua P. Warren, on any search engine. It'll take you there. Or you can go to joshuapwarren.com, and you'll see a little window there that has my Twitter feeds on it. And you can just, even if you're not a member of Twitter, you can just scroll down, click a link, go there, visit it. But I hope that you will follow me on Twitter. So, that said, if you go to joshuapwarren.com, you ought to check out the old curiosity shop. We have a lot of stuff that is about to go out of stock. So, if you go there, joshuapwarren.com, curiosity shop, and then click the link to this podcast, Joshua P. Warren Daily. It is always short, always free, commercial-free, uncensored, independent. And while you're there at joshuapwarren.com and you click that podcast link, well, you'll find that you can subscribe through various different platforms, you know, whether it's iTunes or iHeart or whatever. Or just follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren, and I will usually tweet when a new one is available. So that is it for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest and support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon.